Good morning. This is Hugh LaFollette, your host for Ideas and Issues. On our program this week, I'll be talking with Jana Thompson, professor of philosophy at La Trobe University in Australia, and the topic is rectifying historical injustice. Jana, glad to have you on the show.
Thank you.
We want to talk about questions about rectifying historical injustice, but in order to get there, we need to say something about what exactly you mean by historical injustice.
Well, historical injustice, I suppose, briefly, is something that an injustice that happened quite a long time ago. I think the historical injustice that comes to most people's mind is the Holocaust. And, of course, some of the survivors of the Holocaust are still around. But the historical injustices that I'm particularly interested in are those that happened even a longer time ago, where the original victims are long dead and the perpetrators are also dead. For example, slavery in the United States or the dispossession of Aborigines in Australia or Indian nations in the United States and there are many examples of this sort of thing.
Okay, so you gave two different kinds there. One is the first kind in the case of the Holocaust. In some cases, it may be individuals that are dead, but for the most part, it's people who may themselves have suffered some great injustice, but it was a long time ago.
Yes, and those kinds of historical injustices, I think bring up special problems when the descendants of the victims or their successors make claims for reparation, because these people who are making the claims aren't those who were originally victimized, and they're making claims against people who weren't the perpetrators. One of the way this issue has arisen in my country, Australia, is that the Australian Prime Minister, John Howard, has refused to give apology to Aborigines for past injustices. And his main reason, though the reason he gives, is that, after all, present-day Australians can't be held responsible for things that they didn't themselves do.
Okay. Certainly the question about this lag of time is one that we need to look at in some detail. I wonder if you could say, before that, a little bit in a more general way about why you think there's a case to be made, at least in some instances, for trying to rectify what is recognized as a serious historical injustice. Maybe you could just give a brief outline of what kind of reasons that you would give, and we can look at those, and certainly this issue of time in more detail later.
Well, I think the main reason that I and most people would cite for doing something about historical injustices is that the effects of these historical injustices are still very much with us today. Particularly, sometimes these effects are material, poverty and deprivation that many Aborigines suffer as a result of a long history of injustices. And this is true for many cases of historical injustices. But also, of course, these effects are in the memory of the people concerned. They care about these things. So I think that these reasons are very important. I also think that looking at it from the side of those people who are asked to make reparation, that there is an important principle involved of being responsible for things that people of your nation in the past have done. I think this is, I want to argue that this is part of being a citizen of a nation, having a willingness to take responsibility for things that have been done in the past by leaders and representatives of the nation.
All right, let's look at that second claim in a little bit more detail. What exactly do you have in mind, and why, for example, should I care about something my great-grandparents did? Why do I have some responsibility toward what they've done, either to recognize it or to rectify it in case they've done something inappropriate?
Well, first of all, I don't think it's so much being the descendants of particular ancestors who have done wrong. This brings up another thing that's often said by some political leaders who want to say that they're that they have no responsibility for rectification. That after all, a lot of people who come to a country have come to a country more recently than what the injustice has done. After all, the United States has had many immigrants since the days of slavery. Why should these people whose ancestors weren't implicated at all be responsible? And my answer to that is that it's a collective responsibility of people who belong to a nation, however they happen to get their citizenship, whether they were born in the country or through immigration or whatever. All right, so first of all, I want to make the point, it's not so much who your ancestors were and what they did. It's your nation, what your nation has done in the past, either by its policies or for allowing injustices to happen. All right, that's the first point. The second point I want to make is that in a nation, as an intergenerational society, we often, through our representatives, impose obligations on future members. This is very clear in the case of treaty making, where we are imposing not only legal, but also we assume moral obligations on our successors to keep the agreement. And if we do that, then I say that we have a moral obligation to also keep the agreements of our successors, of the people who, in past generations, who have made agreements. Of course, there are times when agreements become outmoded or unfair. But what I want to point out is that we do impose obligations on our successors in our nation. And we have a similar obligation to do things in respect to what our predecessors did, not because they are our ancestors, maybe they aren't in some cases, but because of this, of the fact that a nation is an intergenerational society depends on people having obligations of these kind. And I think the same is true about obligations to make recompense or reparation for the harm that the people of our nation have done in the past.
Well, I know a lot of people seem to be very suspicious of this idea of collective responsibility. Again, what is it specifically about the fact that we're a nation that makes us be obliged to fulfill some obligations that our earlier people in our country's lives made? I mean, for instance, you mentioned within the country that we feel this obligation to live up to treaties. But in fact, countries do break treaties later on when they say this treaty is no longer in our interest. Now, I mean, I take it part of what you want to argue is they shouldn't, but the fact is many countries do and don't feel very badly about it.
Yeah, I think that there's, nevertheless, I think that whatever, it's true that countries often break their treaties, and sometimes they may actually be justified in doing so. I think that treaties are rather like promises. They should be kept, but there may be circumstances in which it would be unfair to insist that a person keep their promise, and circumstances can change. But I think that whatever international governance there is depends on the regime of treaty making and the presumption that treaties will be kept. And although, of course, there are lots of cases where this presumption is not fulfilled, nevertheless, if it were not recognized at all, there wouldn't be a possibility of any kind of international law and order. So this is a kind of, utilitarian argument for taking this idea of treaty making and keeping fairly seriously. But I think there's another kind of argument that underlies this too. We do think, at least morally, that we ought to have respect for, at least in most cases, for other people's right to self-determination, for their governing, being able to govern themselves. That is, we think we ought to have a respect for other peoples, for other nations. And nations are intergenerational societies. They have to, national leaders and people of a nation have to be able to have some sort of assurance about the future, for the sake of their children and grandchildren and so on. And so there, I think this is another reason why the institution of treaty making and keeping through the generations should be taken seriously, morally speaking. And the fact that treaties are often broken, I suppose, is of no more significance from the fact that people often commit crimes, even though we think that morally and legally they shouldn't.
Let me go back to one of the things you talked about earlier, which seems to at least be part of the story here. And I'm not sure it's the full story in your account, but but it's something you mentioned earlier, that one of the reasons we seem to be concerned or ought to be concerned about trying to do something to rectify historical injustice is that it's not just historical, that somehow the historical justice lives today in its effects, that what Americans did to blacks or what Australians did to Aborigines was not something that just happened in the past. It's something that has important, morally important ripple effects now. And that's at least an important part of why we ought to do something about it. Is that right?
Yes. David Lyons, a legal philosopher, once gave a following example to show that it's very important that there still be effects of that injustice remaining. He said, supposing that a few generations ago, suppose we're living on an island, and a few generations ago, our ancestors were invaded by a horrible, aggressive group of people who persecuted our ancestors, took most of their land, and shoved our ancestors over into a small part of the island. We were forced to eke out a living. That was, however, was several generations ago, and the descendants of these aggressors are quite different people who have given us our fair share of resources, and now we have equal rights and equal opportunities with the descendants of the aggressors. Now, Lyons says, in this kind of case, the historical injustice has been superseded. We have no reason to demand reparation for the injustice that was done to our ancestors. And I think this is quite right. But the fact is that in many cases of historical injustice, the effects still do linger, that those whose ancestors were treated unjustly are still deprived and lack important resources for living decent lives, and that we can trace this lack to not just the original injustice that was done, but the fact that it was never rectified. That is, to a history of injustices.
Well, now, let me ask you one thing about the example you just gave, and this ties into something else you mentioned earlier in the case of Australia. I mean, even if it's true that this later generation is as well off as the other people in the country, would it still be appropriate to at least apologize to those people?
Yes, I think that's sometimes the case, or at least acknowledge that these things happen. Many people have pointed out that memory is very important to a people. It's part of their identity as social beings, and that if an injustice has been done in the past to a group of people, they often do feel that something should be done. And I think also a lot depends on how the injustice was rectified, about how much unfinished business there is. Supposing that in Lyon's story of the islanders, what happened was this. Sometime along the line, after the injustice had been committed, the people who had been victims found on their rather tiny part of the island that was left to them some oil reserves. By this time, the eyes of the world was on the small nation, and the aggressors didn't dare expropriate this resource, and as a result, the formerly victimized islanders became quite rich and through that means got their equal rights. Now, we might say here the problem is that the aggressors have never really apologized and acknowledged that they've done wrong. They have grudgingly had to provide people provide their former victims with resources and rights because they couldn't really do anything else. So I think a lot depends on the history. It doesn't just depend on the original injustice and how serious it was. It depends on what happened afterwards. And I think that has a lot to do with what we now think has to be done.
Okay, I want to explore some of these themes in the second half of the show. I'd like to pause just for a moment. I'm speaking with Jana Thompson, professor of philosophy at La Trobe University, and we're talking about rectifying historical injustice. Let's go back to one of those issues that you mentioned very early in the show. I mean, one of the central objections to talking about rectifying historical injustice, at least in the cases you're talking about, distant past injustices, is the idea that somehow time has wiped away the injustices, that the people who are victims are, excuse me, who were victims are long dead, the people who are perpetrators who are long dead, that if we try to rectify it, we're benefiting people who were not themselves victims, and if we force people to make recompense, we're forcing people to make recompense, although they themselves did not do anything wrong. Certainly a number of things you've said begin to give an answer to that, but how specifically do you address this issue of time? Why is time not as important as objectors seem to think it is?
Well, I think our intuitions on this go both directions. On one hand, particularly when we're faced with, the Serbs, for example, who believe that Kosovo still belongs to them because 800 years ago that territory that included Kosovo did. We say, well, yes, surely time has made a difference here, and things have completely changed, and the Serbs can't make that kind of claim. But on the other hand, we also are inclined to think that a justice is an injustice. Why should the passage of time, as long as that injustice hasn't been rectified, make a difference to the ability of people to make claims? Now, I want to say that you can't make an arbitrary cutoff point, but there are certain things which do make very ancient injustices less likely to be relevant to what we do now. First of all, one of those things is that, of course, what I said before, that what we're looking at is not just the fact that the injustice was done, but what's happened since. And in some cases, we can reasonably say that the injustice has been superseded by other things, by other events between the history of the peoples involved, and that certainly has affected sometimes it may mean that the successors of the perpetrators have really nothing they have to do to rectify an injustice of the past. In some cases, it might mean that what they should do is offer an apology or acknowledge it in their history or something. Another thing I think that makes a difference is that I think there has to be some group of people who can reasonably take responsibility for making the rectification. The ancient Romans did lots of unjust things. They invaded countries, they drove people out of territories, but there's nobody now who has any kind of responsibility for making rectification for what the Romans did. So there's nobody who can now claim rectification for an injustice that was done by the Romans. So I think sometimes that makes ancient injustices outside of what rectification can be made for. Another thing that I think obviously makes a difference is change of circumstances. For example, nobody, including Australian Aborigines, think that Australian Aborigines are now entitled to all of the land that they were dispossessed of in the course of European settlement. Why? Well, one of the obvious answers is that there are other people in Australia now who presumably also have some rights to land, to resources, and that any kind of settlement is going to have to be some sort of compromise.
I definitely want to talk about this issue of remedy in a moment, but let me ask you one other question about time. I think this is right in your view, that part of the reason we get in trouble when we think that time is so important is we think of the injustice as something that happened in the far distant past, and there's two senses in which you want to say it's at least the ones that interest you the most are not just in the far distant past. One is that they have continuing effects, but the second is that the injustices themselves didn't end 150, 200 years ago. They were ongoing injustices, albeit perhaps of a somewhat different sort. So that in the case of the United States, it wasn't just that people were slaves up until 1865, it's also that there was Jim Crow laws for the next 100 years and so on. So I take it that part of the reparation isn't just for ancient wrongs, but also more recent ones which build upon the ancient ones.
Yes, I think that there's a bit of a controversy about this, because some people who argue for black reparations say that, members of the black population in the United States are owed reparation for injustices, but not for slavery. Slavery took place too long ago. It's no longer relevant. Black Americans are owed reparation for more recent injustices. Now, my view is that, first of all, I think that slavery was a special kind of injustice, and it was what I want to call an injustice to family lines. It wasn't just an injustice to the immediate people who suffered it, because the whole idea of slavery, at least as it was practiced in the United States and in many other places, was that you didn't just enslave the individuals themselves, you enslaved their children and their children's children and so on and so on. And that I think that we can't really understand what happened after the Civil War to black people without understanding that in relation to slavery and the determination of white supremacists to continue to suppress black families. So I think that any kind of reparation that now addresses this history has to refer in the end not just to the recent injustices that have been committed against black people in the United States, but to the history of which these other forms of suppression were a continuation.
All right, let's go back then to the themes that you've raised a couple times. I mean, you've talked about reparations, you've talked about giving land back to the Aborigines. I mean, the question of remedy, even if one acknowledges that time is not a bar to rectifying historical injustice, there's a question about what to do. And again, you've raised some of those issues, but I wonder if you could give an overall picture about how you think we ought to approach the question of trying to specifically rectify this historical injustice.
Okay, first of all, I want to say something about reparation or responses to wrongdoing. I think there are two ways of thinking about this. One of those is a kind of a legalistic way, that the ideal behind reparation is to negate the injustice as far as that's humanly possible. That is, as far as it's humanly possible, to bring about a situation that would have existed if the injustice hadn't been done. Okay, that's one response. And I think there are all sorts of problems about this kind of idea of reparation when the injustices are historical. Because, first of all, it's just almost impossible to work out what would have been the case if the injustice hadn't been done. What would have been the case if slavery hadn't have happened in the United States? Well, for one thing, the black Americans now in existence would not have ever been born. All right, but there's another idea of reparation, which I tend to favor, at least in these historical cases, and that's the idea of reparation as reconciliation, that reparation should make it possible for people who have, for the successors of the perpetrators and the descendants and successors of the victims, to be able to find some sort of settlement that's satisfactory to them both, and that both can see as just, which will overcome the injustices of the past in a way that enables them to live together in a peaceful and harmonious way, and which both parties can regard as just. And that's, I think, what you have to aim for, particularly as far as historical injustices are concerned. And that means that the entitlements of of the descendants or successors of the perpetrators have to be considered, as well as the demands of the descendants or successors of the victims.
In terms of very specific remedies, you mentioned earlier the talk about returning of land. Certainly the question of somehow monetary payments has come up. You mentioned earlier apologies. I wonder in the last 3 minutes or so you can try to spell out how specifically we might think about what we should do in the United States, in Australia, or in just in general how we ought to approach this question of the specific appropriate remedy.
Okay. I think that there it depends very much on the particular case you're talking about, because if it's not just the original injustice that's important, but the whole history of injustice from then up to the present, well, obviously different cases are going to require different kinds of remedies because there will be different histories, different effects. But I can say a few things in general. One is, I think that apology, or at least some kind of acknowledgement of past wrongs particularly, is important in all cases, particularly when you're thinking of reparation as reconciliation, that in order for people to live together and have make up their differences, there has to be an acknowledgement of wrong done, an apology given and received. Okay, as far as other material remedies, I think that depends a great deal, as I say, on what is now needed by a community in the light of a history of injustice. For example, I think that Black Americans, the rectification would take the form of regarding it as a matter of priority to ensure that Black Americans have an equal share of resources, that all forms of discrimination are ended, that they have equal chances in life, and that this should be regarded as a priority because the American nation has to, so to speak, settle its accounts with its past by ensuring that they take this, this is taken as a serious matter. I think in many cases where indigenous people have been dispossessed of land, particularly given the way indigenous people usually feel about their land and the fact that their history has been blighted by their loss of it, I think that some sort of return of land is going to be necessary. And sometimes that can be done without without greatly disadvantaging uses of the land that non-Indigenous people want to continue to use. For example, in Australia, in many cases, what Aborigines want is access to their sacred sites, the ability to use their land in a particular way, and that is, in many cases, it's possible to reach some sort of settlement with non-Indigenous people who are now on the land. So I think it a lot depends on the particular case, but I want to make the point that it's not that reparation as reconciliation does involve negotiations, compromise, and a consideration of what history means to the people involved.
Okay, I hate to say it, we're out of time.
That's a pity.
Yes, it is. Thank you very much for appearing in the show today.
Thank you very much.
I've been speaking today with Janet Thompson, professor of philosophy at La Trobe University. This is Sheila Follett for Ideas and Issues. Good day.